Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Today's hour is all about matters of a clandestine nature, a.k.a. a pair of acclaimed scripted series moving into their second season. In the radio exclusive interviews with the creator and executive producers of each program are on tap, starting with Justin Marks from Counterpart, which starts Season 2 Sunday on Stars. He joins me next. And after that conversation, we'll be followed next half hour by one with Stephen Conrad, the overseer of Patriot, currently playing on Amazon. He will join us live from Santa Fe, New Mexico. Also ahead, Kim Possible's return date in human form, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. We're celebrating our first anniversary with them this week. And this just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 37 cold degrees is hot out here in New York, and we welcome you on this Friday afternoon, the program All About Television. Hope you've had a wonderful week. We have a dynamite hour in store for you. Two creator executive producers of two shows now in their second season, both acclaimed and both doing great. And we'll have them for you over the course of the hour, and we invite you to be involved. All it takes, you raise the voice and you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the world. You're on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Another way you can be involved with us is our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk or Speaker screen. Follow the instructions, other people will be live with you. Justin Marsh from Counterpart on Stars, live with us in Los Angeles after these news notes. You know that long-awaited live-action Kim Possible movie now has a premiere date this afternoon. Disney Channel will debut Kim's live adventure with Sadie Stanley in the title role February 15th. Yes, the Ides of February. And yes, Christy Carlson Romano, the voice of Kim on Disney Channel's long-running Toon creation, has a cameo. Right after the movie, Disney Channel will play a preview of new miniseries Fastlane, which will start two nights later. And a quick note, short for update, on last Friday's episode with Daniel Succa, the writer and director of HBO's new made-for-TV movie, Icebox. HBO will now let non-subscribers get the movie via streaming next Monday, 3 days after tonight's premiere. And that is news notes for today. As mentioned, both of our subjects today have a couple things in common. One, you might say they identity bend in the course of their scripted drama. Secondly, they are both overseen by creators and writer-producers who are also showrunners. In one of our cases, you'll hear this person later, he directs most of the episodes. And in our first person's case, he is making his directorial debut with this season. We're talking about Counterpart, the acclaimed program on Stars starring Oscar winner Whiplash J.K. Simmons in a double role that a lot of critics, including yours truly, feel should have been nominated this year for an Emmy Award for Best Actor in a Drama. Joining us live from Los Angeles, the creator, executive producer, and showrunner, Justin Marks. Justin, welcome in.
Hello, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. Justin, how's everybody getting together for and then getting ready for season two?
It's good. It's been a nice little reunion. We just had the cast out here in LA for our season two premiere, and we hadn't seen each other or all been in the same place for a couple months. So it's nice to see them in real life and not just to be staring at their faces on an Avid screen.
Of all the things that both the critics and the audience had to say about season one of Counterpart, what was the thing that really impressed you or moved you about your creation? And in addition, moved J.K. and the rest of the cast?
You know, I think more than anything, what I was most honored and excited by was to see that, you know, people were engaging with the show on a level beyond its espionage roots. I think we like to stand in the genre of espionage and use it to reach for something else. In our case, a show about identity, a show about these questions about what if and who would we be under a different set of circumstances, and what would happen if we could meet that person? Would we like that person? So to see people tapping into that and getting it in that sense was really an honor.
How did Counterpart happen? How did you come across creating it?
For me, I grew up on the books of John le Carré and Graham Greene, and always wanted to do a story in that world, which is a traditional espionage world where it's not about gadgetry or action sequences or rooftop chases, but instead it was about intelligence gathering and quiet conversations and very flawed people having those conversations who are very compromised in a lot of ways. And I wanted to do something like that, but of course to do it in a different fashion that we haven't seen before. So this notion of what if you could meet another version of yourself who came from another world, in this case a parallel world that has grown divergent over the years, and with whom we're engaged in somewhat of a cold war, that started to have a lot of story opportunities. So I wrote it, working with the studio MRC and my collaborator, a producer, Jordan Horowitz, who also comes from Features. And we found a home in Stars with JK and Morten Tildum directing the first episode. They bought it for 2 seasons, which was really a nice gesture of faith, because it meant that we could let ourselves breathe and build our world slowly and with intentionality. So, and then, you know, here we are now, finished with our second season.
You know, Justin, back in the mid-1960s, ABC did a series with the late actor Robert Lansing called The Man Who Never Was, which is about a secret agent who, because of a miscue, has to take on the identity of a millionaire who he sees, which is his exact double. And he gets killed, so he has to take over his life. Including his marriage and a number of other things. I don't know if you've seen the show. It's a wonderful program. I know the pilot's on YouTube, a couple other episodes that were put together as made-for-TV movies later on. But the thing about that series and your series is that you take the situation one step further, which is rather than have someone assume an identity, you have two people who have the same identity or the same likeness to each other, and they have separate lives with identity.
Yes. Yeah. And that's really, you know, this chance to inhabit a version of your life unlived, a version that isn't your life, but very closely resembles how it could have been. You know, that's something that stood at the center for us, because it gave, in the case of JK in the first and second season, this opportunity to really flex and to, you know, in the very first episode of season one, to see how the other Howard Silk, the character who JK plays, gets to confront his brother-in-law in a way that our Howard Silk would never have the courage to do. You know, that I think taps into a feeling, whether we're spies or not, that all of us share in some way, which is this idea of, what if I had said something differently then? What if I had had the courage to say that? What would be the way that situation would have unfolded? And in this case, you know, our characters get to actually see that and then have to deal with the repercussions of that.
And this is all happening inside of an historical landmark, an historical sort of transition history.
Yes. Well, you mean the physical space where this occurs, or the city where our show takes place and the allegory implied?
Actually, both, because you have a Cold War side to this story, which also adds the tension.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I love a good Cold War thriller, but you know, and in the context of today's world, the Cold War as it used to be, kind of feels quaint in a certain sense, and it doesn't exist anymore, and we didn't want to do a period piece. So, you know, the Cold War of a more metaphysical construction, where we're doing a Berlin Wall thriller, but it's an artificial construct between two worlds, gave us all of the allegory that we wanted to do, including, you know, in the first season, I think we very much delved into the history of Berlin before 1961, leading up to the construction of the wall and the separation of East Berlin and West Berlin and East Germany and West Germany, and what it implied. And then in season two now, the wall is up, so to speak, and we're able to play around with, you know, the height of the Cold War in the 1960s. I feel like we're dealing with our own Cuban Missile Crisis in a certain way. You know, history continues to be a place that we can reach back to, but of course applied in our own context, applied in our own interdimensional battle that's going on.
Counterpart, the acclaimed spy drama from Stars with Oscar winner J.K. Simmons in a performance, I said again, a lot of people were hoping was going to get an Emmy nomination this year for Best Actor Drama. It did not. Hopefully next year it might just get that shot. Anyway, the second season premiere is this Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Stars. Justin Marsh is the creator, the executive producer, and the showrunner of the series. And in this second season, he makes his debut as director. We'll talk about that shortly. He's with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Time out with you live from New York. Delighted you're with us. If you're joining us live on Blog Talk Radio Speaker, we're on replay on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And this week, by the way, we're marking our first anniversary, joining all the great podcasts you can find on iHeartRadio. If you have a question or comment, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Diamond Apple 04 by name. Coming up Monday on our program, we will have a documentary filmmaker who has a debut production now on Netflix. It's called Roll With Me, and it deals with somebody who you will find very unforgettable. The director, Lisa France, will join me as our lead guest. And then there's a brand new network you can find on smart TV sets and smart devices. It's called Focus TV, and it's all talk variety. We will talk to not only one of the key people at Focus TV, but someone who co-created, hosts, and produces their own program. It's called Good Morning La La Land from Los Angeles. We will speak with Jeslan Moyet. That's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Televised. So join us and be involved in the program. So, Justin, how does the story evolve from season one to season two?
I think we really, in season two, we're right where we left off, and that's part of the fun of the show is to keep our time pretty tight. A few weeks have passed, which is a change. We used to joke in the writers' room that it's nice to start an episode without, you know, a character simply waking up because it's kind of one day after another in the way the events are very tightly wound. But we now have, you know, exist in this place where the two worlds have separated themselves for diplomatic reasons by closing a door and forbidding crossing from either side, which means that J.K.'s two characters, Howard and Howard Prime, as we call them, are both stuck in the opposite world from which they came. Howard finds himself a prisoner of that world because at the end of the season, he has committed a transgression against someone who I will just avoid spoilers by talking about. But Howard Prime, on the other side, is kind of living the life, and he's with Howard's wife, this woman, Emily, who's now just coming out of a coma, and really has no idea that the man she's living with is not her actual husband. And, you know, in some sense, that's a dream come true for Howard Prime because it's a chance to rekindle an old feeling that he lost in his world. But in others, it's a prison as well because he finds himself trapped by the same mistakes he used to make in his own past. And the more he gets to know this Emily, whose sort of memory is coming back, the more he finds himself imperiled and his status to be in question. So it was a really fun season to build out now. And finally, you know, I feel like we were setting a lot of tables in the first season. And in season two, it really becomes an all-out war between the worlds and between these two characters who are striving to get what the other person has.
Why did you call one Howard Prime and the other Alpha?
You know, that was just a pretty straightforward mathematical delineation. I remember back to the days of, you know, where you put a number down, and then if you put that little apostrophe up to the right of it, it's a prime number, or a number prime, or a variable prime. And that's all we wanted to do was just sort of Alpha being predominant and first, and then Prime being this other one, which, you know, in the sort of parlance of grammar becomes a little different, but we like to think of ourselves as pretty left-brained in the way that we conceive of things, and that just really stuck, and that works from the script to every department through production, including our call sheets, when it comes to are we in the Alpha world or the Prime world, because there's a whole different set of requisites that come with that. So it's something that we never try to use in the language of dialogue on the show itself, because I don't think they would see it that way. In fact, very definitively, we try to make sure that the relationship between the two worlds is non-hierarchical. In other words, who came first? Well, that's a good mystery that maybe someday we'll answer. But, you know, it's more of a circle and a square than it is an alpha and a prime, or a number one and then the duplicate. You know, both worlds kind of have an equal status in our minds.
Those of us who follow J.K. Simmons' career knows that he is an incredibly talented and versatile actor. Even before his Oscar-winning performance in Whiplash, you saw him as a psychologist on many episodes of Law & Order. You've seen him as J.J. Jameson, the newspaper publisher on the Spider-Man movies with Tobey Maguire. The Farmers Insurance commercials, he is such a hoot with the We Know a Thing or Two Because We've Seen a Thing or Two campaign acting before. He's someone that is such a chameleon actor that you always, if you don't know the name, you always enjoy him and you always enjoy the performance. How tough was it to invite him to play a double role where it's tough enough to be like the lead actor and have a lot of the scenes your way every episode, but doing two roles that have to be so fleshed out and so complete in every episode, that had to be some challenge.
Yeah, it's a marathon. It really is. And J.K. knew what he was getting involved in when he signed up. He had read the first episode, and he and I had a conversation where I kind of walked him through the biographies of both characters and how they were both going to unfold in the first season as well as the second and beyond. So we really had to make sure we were on the same page, because there are a lot of scenes where it's just J.K. and J.K. essentially, you know, sniffing each other's butts and getting to know each other and going through this process as two completely separate individuals. So to keep track of it all, in a lot of ways it's very complex, and in other ways it's very simple. JK has just certain things that he has in his head that ground himself in a certain scene. And remember, he's not playing two characters. He's playing eventually both of these characters, especially this season, pretending to be the other. So you have a situation where there's almost four versions of himself that he has to play. And it's like watching an impression of an impression when you see it. You always know that there's a truth beneath it all that is who he's actually playing. But then there's this game that he plays above it. So it really becomes a masterclass. I mean, it's amazing to watch. And when you consider a guy whose body of work is as long and deep as his is, you're looking at the father from Juno playing against the conductor from Whiplash, playing against his character from Oz, and playing against, you know, his sort of harsher side from Spider-Man. It's really fun to be able to see all those different sides of J.K., as well as the rest of our cast, many of whom get to play their others as well.
Want to welcome guest 88 and guest 90 into our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blog.radio.com/televised. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Because you're now in a second season, and some might find the idea of a double role played by one actor a novelty, how do you keep the role, both roles, fresh and get off the novelty factor, but do it in such a way that the audience stays with the character and stays with what the characters go through?
I think the answer came from a conversation that J.K. and I had at the very beginning, which is this has to be an ensemble show. This is like any good television show. You want your world and your ambition to expand as every season goes on, to build off of its base. And last season, we had a very strong base with the two J.K. Simmons, getting to know them and starting to really explore who they were. This season now, we always were targeting our trajectory towards being able to now introduce the audience to both sides of his wife, Emily, who Olivia Williams plays brilliantly. And I think that the more we get to know her, the more we start to unfold and unpeel these secrets that were lying at the heart of season one. But you also get to see, you know, different versions of that woman, both kind of chasing a common idea. In Emily's case, there's not just Emily Alpha and Emily Prime, but there's also this mystery woman of who Emily Alpha used to be before her accident that happened before season one, and this, what secrets did she know? So in some sense, if last season we just had two versions of one self, here we have two versions of another self who are both chasing a third version, if you will, a woman who she used to be in the past. So I think when looking at long form TV, and I come from features, so it's been a new language to appropriate, but you always want to be continuing to build out your base with characters who we are invested in. And I could say the same for Harry Lloyd and Nazneen Boniadi's characters of Quail and Claire, as well as for Ian Shaw and Baldwin and all these other characters we built in the first season. Now we start to take our hands off the handlebars after we've learned to ride the bike and start to do more complex things with them.
You have a very terrific special act who I've enjoyed for years, playing a major guest role in season two. But first, you are making your debut as a director, and I'm curious if that was something you wanted to do in the first season, or you decided, let's wait, let's get the show established, and then let me give it a go.
You know what? I think everyone comes to directing in different ways. For me, I love writing. I've always, I see myself as a writer first. I feel that any strengths that I have as a director come from the writer side of me. And I really had not given it much thought beyond watching our brilliant directors work in seasons one and two. And then at some point saying, you know, I would become a better writer and a better producer if I knew how to do it myself and engaged in directing myself. And the script for episode six, which is the episode I directed, was a script that I wrote as well. And as I was writing it, I just kind of fell in love with it. It's a very different way to do our show. It's a very special episode, and I'll kind of keep silent about it, except to say that it felt like the kind of thing that if I was ever going to try to direct, now would be the time. And you also have to add to the fact that, you know, I've worked with our crew in Berlin as well as Los Angeles for the last several years making this show. So I felt very protected by them and very supported. And it's not always the case that you would walk into a situation like that. So in a certain way, it would be madness if I didn't give it a shot. And we had a great time. It was a very special episode and really fun for everyone to do together. In a lot of ways, it deals with questions that stand at the heart of the show that connect all of our episodes together. So it was kind of the perfect episode to direct.
Season 2 of Counterparts, starring J.K. Simmons, begins this Sunday night, 9 p.m. Pacific time on Starz, available on cable and satellite all over the U.S. of A. We've got the creator, executive producer, showrunner, and for one episode of this season 2, director Justin Marks. He joins us live in Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tommy Applebaum, we do live from New York. Glad you're with us on this Friday afternoon. Thanks for wrapping up the week with us. If you have a question or a comment for Justin, don't be shy. Make the phone ring, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Guest 90 is already in the room. Coming up a week from today on the program, a guest I haven't had on in a long time will be back with us, Jim Lauterbach. He is a terrific expert on all things television and tech. He's also general manager of the very popular event VidCom, dealing with lots of great web and now smart TV and smart device content that takes place every year in Los Angeles. And Jim will be with us, one of our guests, next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And coming up in our next half hour, we've got live from Santa Fe, New Mexico, Stephen Conrad, the creator, executive producer, and often director of Patriot, now in its second season on Amazon. One of the guest stars, Justin, you're going to have this year is someone who, like J.K.'s work, I've always admired, and that's James Cromwell. In fact, in many ways, he looks like, or almost looks like, you know, a spitting image of J.K. What was it like to get James and to have him work with J.K.?
I mean, it was surreal. Kyle Alvarez, who directed the first episode that they appeared in together, kept taking photographs of the monitor because he just couldn't believe that, you know, we had these two legends on screen with each other. And for some really meaty scenes, too. I mean, we're not just talking about bumping into each other, walking outside the grocery store. These two really get into it with each other. You know, Jamie came to our show by fortunate circumstance. Very last minute in a lot of ways as we were just pulling the season together. And we had some long conversations about his character and some of the implied themes that his character espouses. And one of the things that really struck me about him when talking about it was that, you know, we would sort of speak to some of the bleaker and more cynical aspects of his character's worldview, which are very much shaped by the existence of this crossing and the inevitability of what happens to people when they're confronted by it. And he looked at me at one point and he says, But you don't actually believe this, do you? You don't believe that this is, you know, man's true nature and the way they are. And I looked at him, I'm like, oh my God, no, no. I mean, I'm so glad you asked. He said, good, I just want to make sure that we're doing spiritually the same kind of show. And that's really the level that Jamie Cromwell engages on, is he wants to feel that there's a reason for everything he's doing. He doesn't want to just kind of show up and speak the lines and know where his mark is. There's this great human side to him that I and the rest of the writers and our directors just found so invigorating creatively. I mean, he really was a pleasure. And what he added to the role beyond what was on the page for someone coming in as a guest is also so rare and so amazing. So it was really fun both to work with him as a writer and a producer, and also as a director. And in my episode, just a true one of a kind moment.
Justin, for you and everybody involved, how long do you all hope this journey goes on?
Well, that's it's a question that changes every month depending on how tired I am. We had a really great time this season. We have a plan. I would be lying if I said that I come at it from a very arbitrary way and say it's 7 seasons and I know exactly how every season's going to play out. We keep it year to year. There's one image that I have in my head that I see as the final image of our series. It's an image that the writers and I share and that we all kind of chase in a certain way, but we don't know how we're going to get there. And we know that we haven't gotten there yet. So I'm very hopeful that we'll have a future and continue to be able to do the show for any number of years. But part of the fun of staying unpredictable in this show is to really just take it a year at a time and be able to look at the show as an audience and not just as writers and say, okay, well, how can we stay exciting? How can we turn this on its head next? How can we keep people guessing in the best possible way?
The second season of Counterpart begins this Sunday night on Starz, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Check your local listings for where Starz is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, here's where you go, www.starz.com. It's www.starz.com. Second season Counterpart, Sunday night, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. And hopefully next year, not only does J.K. get that Emmy nomination, but the show as well. See what I mean when you catch the program. It is one of the most unique shows of its kind on scripted television. Justin Mark, the creator, executive producer, showrunner, soon-to-be director, thank you again for making the time this Friday to be with us. It's been a pleasure all the way. Congratulations to you,
thank
J.K.,
you.
Everybody on the second season, and hopefully many more to come.
No, it was great to talk. Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to listening to Stephen Conrad. He's a brilliant writer, so stick around.
All right, you got it, Justin. Take care. All the greatest.
Thanks. Okay, bye.
Justin Marks, joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our classic trivia question of the weekend. We started on Monday. No winner yet. Well, let's see if we get one this weekend. And if you are first with the correct answer, you can win some DVDs, Inside North Korea's Dynasty, the recent special from last month on National Geographic, and Cesar Millan, Love My Pit Bull on Nat Geo Wild, plus Critic Book, The Genius Box, about where TV's at and where it's going by acclaimed author and former TWBT guest, David Tai. Here's the question. What animated holiday TV special featured a song called Ringle, Ringle? What animated TV holiday special had a song called Ringle, Ringle? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you're first with the correct answer, you'll win those great prizes. Nice trio and all. Great for the holiday season. Gift for you or someone you love. If you missed the question a moment ago, don't worry. I'll post it throughout the weekend on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, be in, play in, and all the very best. Coming up our next half hour from San Jose, New Mexico, Stephen Conrad, the creator, executive producer, and director of the acclaimed Amazon series, Patriot. We'll talk about that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio in the galaxy, www.blogtalkradio and www.spreaker.com. Together, more than 30 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR brings you Kings in the Morning every weekday, including this coming Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. Join Jay King and the crew. You'll enjoy them. So do many. Right here, Kings in the Morning on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow We Televise for this Friday afternoon in December 2018. Simon Applebaum with you live from Nueva York. 37 cold degrees at the top of the hour. Another great guest coming your way this half hour. And we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. 646-652-2906. That's the number to call if you want to check in with our guests. We also have our chat room. You can do the same thing, too. SimonApple04 by name. You'll find our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We will have our second guest of the day after some fine words from the folks at Audible.com. Are you still looking for a great holiday present for you or someone you love? Here's one, and it's a freebie. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/televised, and you can get not one, not two, but three audiobook titles. And sample them, or have someone you know sample them for a full month. It's not only one of the 1,000 titles you can choose from, but also the growing catalog of Audible Theater. It's the wonderful collection of off-Broadway and Broadway shows, one-man, one-woman productions, and original audio dramas and comedies made especially for Audible.com. And that's why it's called Audible Theater. And the great news is you can get three audiobooks, one from the normal catalog, two from Audible Theater through this special trial offer. And don't forget that Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. As I said, over 100,000 titles to choose from. You listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, iHeartRadio. And all you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/televised. You get those three free audiobooks and a one-month trial of the service for you or someone you love. Makes a great Christmas, Hanukkah. We still got Hanukkah going on, folks. Kwanzaa, whatever holiday you celebrate, or you know somebody else celebrates, it's a sensational gift because you're giving people the gift of sound, the gift that audibletrial.com will transform the way you hear the world. So again, for those three free audiobooks, including two from the growing catalog of Audible Theater, all you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/televised. You'll be happy you did. And now joining us live from Santa Fe, New Mexico, is the creator, executive producer, and often director of the critically acclaimed Amazon series now in season two, Patriot, Stephen Conrad. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, do I have to talk as fast as you can? Because I can't. That's really impressive.
Oh, we may have a competition going on before all is said and done. Stephen, how are things going with season number two?
Well, it came out 2 weeks ago, and so far, so good. We have, I think, been able to make the people who like the show continue to watch it and feel good about it. And there's some new people coming to us this year. So we had a good long year in Paris shooting it, and they made us sit on it for about 4 months. So we were all really anxious to get it out there and to begin to share it with the fans of the show who waited so long. And I wanted to mention that we all, those of us who make the show, appreciate that patience and that long, long delay. And I hope it was worth the wait.
Just like Counterpart, your program also deals with identity in a very unusual way. Explain that with your main character.
Well, he has two. He's got a cover job, and he's got his real job. So at his cover job, he's assumed the identity of a sort of middle-level technical engineer working in a pretty complicated and nuanced engineering firm, and he understands none of it. And he's faking his way through science in order to perform the functions of his real job, which is as an intelligence officer. He is himself in that job, but that job also involves a lot of camouflage. And so identity is it's a question that's on the table in Patriot in a big way. And he has an inner person that I think he is driven to become, who is more of an artist than a intelligence officer. So he has to fight that person back, that identity back, in order to pretend to be other people. So yeah, we're very wrapped up in that question. We ask questions of the audience, like, what does your working life bring to you? What does your artistic life bring to you? And which is more valuable, how those two coexist. So Patriot, as fun as it is, can get deep every once in a while in that way, which is why we all cared to keep working on it when we realized the studio would make more Everybody came back.
In our last half hour with Justin Marshall of Counterpart, he mentioned that he was inspired to create his program on the spy novels of John le Carré, who is someone that likes to do novels where it's not bang-bang espionage, everybody gets shot up, but it's more clandestine in terms of conversation that sometimes, or silence, where the evil happens. And also in the case of his show, where you have, as I mentioned, it reminded me of The Man Who Never Was, where you have somebody stepping into identity, sort of like the dual role. But in this case, you have both roles happening. It's not one assuming the identity of another. It's two identities, you know, merging together in different ways. I'm curious what your inspiration was for you in creating Patriot.
Yeah, no, I get that. We do that too. When we realized that we could start to make this new art form, it really is a new art form, the long-term serialized storytelling, shows that don't have commercials and shows that are largely uninterrupted, 1 to 2 to 3. You can watch them. You can watch 10 hours straight if you care to. It creates a new relationship with an audience, that delivery system, where you are asking for very long periods of somebody's time. You're telling a story, but you're also in people's homes for very long periods of time under different terms, because there's not a week off between episodes. It's sort of like you move into their private spaces for longer periods of time. So what occurred to me we might do with that relationship is not just to sound feel like your favorite novel, which, you know, you love novels because of the things they notice about life, and then you notice that they notice what you do, and then you start to love them. They become very personal to you for that reason. Stories take you away. Really good stories take you away. And then there's this other thing we do on Patriot, which I thought we might have the opportunity to do, which is to be musical and to have a sound that sounds like records you might love. And when you love a band or you love music, I think what you're loving is you love what someone decides to sing about, or that you love what they decide to write songs about, and that they Neil Young can sing about things that Bob Dylan doesn't and the Rolling Stones don't. And so when they choose what to sing about, they choose you. They choose their audience. And I wanted to create a show that did all three of those things, that notice things that novels notice, that tells a story like the best cinema does, that's exciting, but that also had the sound of the records you love when you thought these, you can sing about things you never expected before, and it sounds like this. So I know what he means about Le Carré, and I think we go into other spaces on Patriot, though, because of the music.
When you can establish that kind of relationship with both the viewers and with the company you're writing for and doing this for, which is Amazon, how does that impact you not only as a writer, but also as a director? Because what people should know is that unlike Justin, who is making his debut as a director with one episode in his series this season, you actually, from the get-go, have been directing quite a few of the episodes.
Yeah, well, it's cool because you know, well, so we have a spy show, and it has to work like a spy show, but in our spy show, our spy sings a song, and you have to know, you have to challenge yourself to be able to contribute to the spy show and to the musical. So we do an awful lot of preliminary work as a group of filmmakers. Our writers, we spend way too much time together. In fact, we're all in the car together at this moment. In New Mexico, we're making a second TV series while Patriot is in hiatus. And everybody's just in the car just talking about how do we make this new show into something we would love if we just happened on it. But we did all that work on Patriot, the same group of guys, just essentially moving in together, watching movies. And we say, well, this feels like this is where the spy show hits a wall. How can we break through that wall? This is where a musical might hit a wall. How can we break through the wall? So Amazon knew that we were trying to be very good at both things, and we're also on this very strange delivery system where they sell our records. So they sell the show and they sell the music, and they institutionally, they're just about the only space that can do that sort of thing. So we're at home there because of the diversity of our delivery system. So it works for us. So they encourage us to be broad-minded about what we might accomplish. Now, we they do insist that we regard that bottom line of suspense as job one, but we're very happy to do that because it's my favorite part of the job is to be craftful and write a story that works, because it's the hardest part of the job to understand that you are telling something that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And in this new day and age of this serialized storytelling, the middle goes on forever, and the middle is the hardest part. I think anybody who writes movies would tell you the middle is where you get exposed as an artist. Like, if you don't know what you're doing, it's the middle that's going to share that with people. You, at some point, you got to earn your keep in the middle of something to make yourself worthwhile. And all TV is a long middle. So I love it. I don't have plans right now to go back to making films. We're also challenged by the speed of this, the ambition of it all. And in fact, the challenge to stand out in this market that's got so many shows, you think, well, we can't just do it the same way as everybody else. No one's going to know we're here.
Patriots, now in its second season on Amazon. And if you have a smart TV set or a smart TV device like Amazon Fire TV or Roku or Google Chromecast, chances are Amazon is somewhere on your dial. We've got the creator, executive producer, and often director of Patriot with us. That's Stephen Conrad. He joins us live from Santa Fe, New Mexico, beautiful part of this U.S. of A. And he's with us live this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted that you're spending some Friday afternoon time with us. We hope it's time well spent. And we invite you to spend some time with us on the phone or in the chat room. If you have a question or comment for our guest, it's 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, coming up on next episode, Monday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here, we will have Lisa France. She is the director of a very moving Netflix documentary that premiered on December 1st. It's called Roll With Me. The character that you will see in this documentary, I promise you, is unforgettable. And then we'll focus on one of the new networks you can find on smart TV sets and smart devices. It comes from L.A. It's called Focus TV. We'll have one of the key people there who also co-produces, hosts, and produces, and co-creates, I should say, her own program. And that program, which happens daily, is called Good Morning La La Land. Jennifer Moyet. We'll be with us at 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific Monday. On Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. One of the ways that you really differentiate your show from not only what's on the air now, but from a lot of other espionage dramas, which tend to be very moody, tend to be very dark, is humor. Was that something that you wanted to do from the get-go?
Yes, for sure. And it just so happens that the group of people that we make Patriot with, we all happen to share the same sense of humor. My brother plays one of the main characters, and Chris contributes an awful lot to the show in terms of throwing ideas in. But if I had to give that group any common characteristic, it would be that we all used to be the kids who weren't cool, who made fun of the parts of movies that were trying to be cool. Somehow it made us feel better about ourselves, I guess, but just not going along with that message, that the James Bond message, the Jason Bourne message, being able to find what we thought was funny about the way those characters represented themselves. It drew us together, and then it allowed us to have some goal or some recognition that we had a sound to make, that we could love these shows and then make them in a way that made us contribute to them and not just repeat them, but then also to be able to say to an audience, I've had that same thought that you had about this show. What we say at Patriot is that we want to make this show easy to like. And if you like the show, there are many little things we do to indicate to the audience that we appreciate that you're watching. We have catchphrases that we repeat, and they're there to be noticed if you care to notice them. We have we hide these little things in there that can be discovered if you're really paying attention, and it's all done on purpose, and it's all done just to celebrate the fact that we have an audience that we appreciate greatly. So that was our goal, was to make a show that you could just love like we only made it for you, if you happen to find something like that. And it's generally a way you feel about books and music. It's less often a way you feel about movies, but it was our goal as a group to make something that feels unique to a sensibility. And if you ask me what that sensibility would be, it would be someone that just isn't up for that cool thing that movies do all the time. That we're sort of anti-cool. Our main character is not cool. But that makes him cool. He's like more like Snoopy than anybody else. He just keeps marching through these idiotic plans, singing a song. Anyway, that probably was confounding and made no sense at all. But
talk about
you. Very particular to the group who makes it.
Yeah. Talk about your lead actor and how he took the role on, and what guidelines did you give him to sort of establish the ambiance and sort of the wink, wink, we're having fun here making an espionage show that you wanted?
Well, he's a tremendously talented actor and musician, and hasn't worked a whole lot because he's very particular about the work and cares about the art form an awful lot. So he uses an awful lot of discretion when he picks work. We were lucky to get him, and he's just a young man who is in this business for the right reasons. And I don't think he cares about being famous. I think he cares about making something he can be proud of. I can tell you a little story that I learned all I needed to know about Mike Dorman. When we made our pilot in Montreal, and we hadn't been able to spend any time together, and I wasn't able to convey any of my ideas to our costumer beforehand. And I walked into his first fitting, and he was dressed like he was in Mission Impossible. Just really cool, like a tight leather motorcycle jacket, the kind of jacket that my friends and I make fun of if we saw a guy wearing it. And I walk in and he's wearing it, and he looked like he wanted to be somewhere else so desperately. And he shared with me the unhappiest face I've ever seen him make. Like, he wanted to be in a green, torn sweatshirt the whole show, because that's the way we dress when we're feeling blue or alone. We put on that one thing that gives us comfort. So he is an artist like that. He's a unique kid who happens to have those sensibilities, and they fit hand in glove with mine. So there's no mystery that Mike and I correspond. And you know, I write the music and Mike performs it, and it's in a very small group of artists in Chicago and in Nashville. It's like our second family, and Mike and I have to spend a lot of time working on the music of the show. And it wouldn't sound like it sounds if Mike and I didn't really correspond as artists. And I don't know how we sound, Mike. I'm just lucky that we did. And we had to fly him from the other end of the world. He's from New Zealand via Australia. And he's a surprise to American audiences. They haven't seen him in anything. And I think that really helps Patriot. I think it allows you to identify with John like you found John, and not like he's in movie 11. Like, the thing just doesn't feel like a thing that could have sequels. We wanted it to feel like a thing that just showed up on, someone slid it under your door.
You mentioned before that you have catchphrases as part of Patriot. What are some of those catchphrases, and how do you manage them in the course of a season so they don't go out of hand? And I ask this because I remember way back when one of the most popular comedies of all time was Get Smart with Don Adams. And they would have catchphrase after catchphrase that became national sensations, like, you know, would you believe this? Or would you believe that? How about this? Or missed it by that.
Oh,
much.
Yeah, but you wouldn't.
Or, and, et cetera.
You wouldn't even, yeah. Here's how, because you wouldn't notice ours unless you watched the show twice. They would go right by you. You really have to dig it. You have to be a hardcore fan to find them. But they exist, and they're my favorite. They're my favorite conversations when somebody finds everything we hide in there, and they can. I sat next to a guy on a plane, and he could list every single one, and he's watched it three times. And so it's that kind of thing. Like, you, we wanted only to say with those things that we appreciate someone paying attention, but you really have to pay attention.
It seems like the show has a sort of playful attitude. There's, as I mentioned before, there's like this, it's like a wink, wink, insider. Come on in, we're all having fun here. Yes, it's a spy drama, but it's, you know, but you can have fun while you're watching.
Yeah, that was part of the goal too, to expect that many hours of somebody's time. I think we just decided that the show ought to have a personality that's sort of like the people that you like, you know, the people that can be serious. And then they can also be funny. The people who are nearest and dearest to you are not just one sort of person, that they are thorough. And it was our goal for the show that it also feel like that. I thought if you could pull it off, it would help to make the show easy to like, and then also it would distinguish it in that field. And we just happen to have a cast who can do that sort of thing, that all of them are capable of being moving and also capable of being very funny. And because, you know, we're on hour 18 now, I mean, 18 hours of watching some group perform make-believe, I think you must have different powers in order to continue to be arresting to an audience. And I cast that way knowing, well, Kurtwood Smith is a perfect example. Kurtwood plays Leslie Clare, and he's often making you laugh. But in season two, he's heartbreaking, and he delivers our deepest themes in the strongest way. And I rely on Kurtwood to do both those things. And he's an actor who I had my eye on for years and knew that he could do that sort of thing. And I have been trying to rope him into our group forever. It's true of Terry O'Quinn. My brother is capable of doing all that stuff. Michael Chernis, Dorman does it all day long. Like, to a person in our cast, Elliot Opine, Kathleen Monroe, that they all can do all of it. So in that sense, it's really like a band that has these textures and sounds and nuance, and they can sing anthems if they want. If they all get together, they can each write a song. So in that sense, when we were trying to find a tone, I remember saying to everybody that I really want this to feel like an album you like more than a TV show you like, because we're in a new age of television. We're the ancestors of these beautiful shows that did this thing so well in the early going, like Deadwood and The Sopranos and The Wire. The shows that suggested that you could keep your narrative going and make it cohesive and make it beautiful and make it add up at the end, like you knew exactly where you were going when you started. Like, we're the beneficiaries of those great shows, and I think we owe it to them to contribute to the art form that they helped create. Like, we're not Streets of San Francisco. Like, we owe what we do to The Sopranos. And I don't want to just be as good as they were or do an imitation of them. I want to contribute something new from our collection of artists to what that new art form can be. And for us, it was trying to allow music to get inside of people's bones the same way that drama does, and to make a show that has a lot to say about life on Earth through this genre that is pretty limited generally. Like a spy show, you get girlfriends and gadgets and action, and there's not a lot of small, like, they don't do the small stuff, right? And you can't make 18 hours without being good at the small stuff. So I thought that genre was just ready for someone who cares about the small stuff, take it and try to contribute to it. So I think we got lucky and we found a genre that needed a breath of fresh air, maybe in the way that we care about it. But one could do that with any of our famous film dramas. There's a great book called Sisters Brothers that does that with Western in such a beautiful way. And I think that made an impression on us as a group of writers that, you know, we could do that with the spy thing too.
And you're doing something very interesting and maybe much groundbreaking in a way, because when we've had spy dramas either on screen or in television before, we've either had the music scenes be memorable, a la Lalo Schifrin and Mission Impossible. You can't go anywhere with Mission Impossible without knowing that theme. Or it's every James Bond movie has a theme, has a song, whether it's For Your Eyes Only or Diamonds Are Forever or Goldfinger, and sometimes often the song is a hit song. But in your show, you really weave music, singing or songs in the plot itself, in the episodes themselves, not whether it's you just get it at the beginning of the show, maybe the end of the show, or it's a score. You really, and that's something very new for a show of this kind.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I don't even know how we thought of that. It just, I think possibly it comes from that pressure to always be secretive that, you know, this walk of life carries with it. And I thought, well, how do you make that tense and combustible? What's the other appetite that person might have that would be at odds with that? And, you know, the songwriter, it's an attribute to be able to be honest. So I just wondered, what if we are all so many things at one time, and it's where so much of the tension in our lives comes from. And we're not trying to do anything new in terms of making a show that doesn't have tension. if we're doing anything new, it's that we find tension in a different place. But the show cares about suspense and tension, maybe even more greatly than most things that are on TV. I think that our writers are very good at it, and they care about it a lot. And when we line up shots, they're there to be suspenseful. So I don't, it's not like we're throwing out tension. I think we're just looking for it where it exists, maybe more commonly in our human construction, with which is to be so many things at one time, and to in the span of a moment to be able to try to do two different things at once, one of which can completely destroy the other one. Like, that sounds like life to me. And I thought, if we're going to be spending so much time with this young man, he ought to be familiar like that.
Closing question, same as we did with Justin on Counterpart. How long do you and your, we have about a minute left, how long would you and your folks like this journey to continue, have the show run for?
Well, we have to have the resources to be able to do it well, because the show is very greatly cinematic, and today we've been given those resources. And all I mean is that we just need the time and the money to be able to do it right. And Amazon's waiting to see, you know, they're gathering that information. They're waiting to see how big our audience is. And if they ask us to come back and to be lesser than this year, we'll say no. And if they ask us to come back and have the same set of resources, we'll all say yes. But everybody on Patriot goes away for so long. And because we're an international show, everybody shoots 3,000 miles from home. And what we all say to each other late at night is we just want to be able to come home and be proud of the thing that we made. So those terms have to stay the same. And I have my fingers crossed that they can, because I love this group. They're my favorite group of artists I've ever had the honor to be able to collaborate with. We're one of those shows where everybody likes each other. It's bizarre. So I want to keep going, but we need our corporation to send us back out there. And there's so many shows on TV. There's 500 shows, and if you have 1/500th of the audience, it's not enough to justify sending us back to Paris. So if we can go back and make the show well, I'm going to go back and make the show, because I really love it. In fact, I feel like Patriot's the first thing that I've ever had a hand in that is getting this sound out that I've been trying to make my whole life properly. Like, it all just kind of fell together in terms of how much experience we had, how up for weirdness the group was. So I don't want to turn my back on something that's allowed us to be good and fun and strong, that those aren't even goals sometimes when you make movies for other studios. So
Steven, I hate to say we got to cut off because we're running out of time. But I just want to let everybody know you can catch Patriot Season 2 wherever you have a smart TV set or smart TV device. It's on Amazon. Available 24/7. For more details about the promo online, Amazon.com. Patriot Season 2, now available on smart TV sets and smart devices ever. Steven, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on Season 2. Hopefully many more in store. And we appreciate you being with us.
Thanks for your interest. Take care, guys.
You too. Take care. Have a great weekend. And all of you as well. By the way, I want a quick shout out to Tracy Swaylow for a great TV Tomorrow show yesterday. And again, thank you for our first year on iHeartRadio Podcast Network. To the iHeartRadio folks, we hope you have a wonderful holiday season. And thank you for taking us on 1 year ago. And we hope to expand the relationship in the coming year. The views presented on this program are those of participants. Also, those of Blog Talk Radio, Speaker iHeartRadio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Tillis, Blog Talk Radio's general manager. And we have Dave Sonberg, executive content producer. Co-founders, Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we televised is brought to you by Amazon. I should say Audible.com, the Amazon company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. Don't forget, AudibleTrial.com/televised for a 1 month trial and 3 audiobooks for this holiday season. Tomorrow we televised. I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Back Monday, 3 weeks to do the city. You know where, Blog Talk Radio Speaker and iHeartRadio. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.